Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in. This is the Tuesday edition of The Drive, live from SEC Media Days. Dan Peck on Radio Row in Dallas, Texas. Bill Cameron back in the studio. Bill, can you hear me?
Got you, Dan. Yeah.
All right, good.
Yeah, everything's fine.
Wanted to make sure we weren't doing yesterday again.
No. We can we can hear you today, and hopefully you can hear us.
And I can hear you. No, it's wonderful. This has been, you know, we talked about it and we saw the schedule, Bill. Like this has been a busy and really fun day of SEC Media Days from an Auburn standpoint. Three of Auburn's opponents were among the teams going today. The other one, Tennessee. I was talking about it with Jacob. I mean, even though Tennessee's not on the schedule, you see parallels between what Josh Heupel was trying to build when he got there and what Hugh Freeze has attempted to do at Auburn. So I thought there was some really cool insight into how other programs are viewing the Auburn game, not to mention some other things that coaches like Kirby Smart and Brent Venables and the always enjoyable Eli Drinkwitz were able to talk about at SEC Media Days today.
I don't know that you're going to have many days. Anybody will have many media days with four teams that combined for more wins than these four teams did last year. Tennessee had the worst record of the four teams that were there today, going 9-4. The only team that didn't win double digits of the four teams that were there today.
Yeah, and I think Oklahoma and Tennessee might be teams that surprise folks when you realize they won 10-9, because you don't really hear about, they're not at the top of the list of preseason conference championship contenders, and those two teams will square off in Oklahoma's first SEC game.
Right,
that's the game
the week before. Yeah,
they'll host Tennessee, and that'll be Josh Heupel's homecoming as well. Former Oklahoma quarterback going to Oklahoma with his Tennessee Volunteers. So yeah, that should be a really special moment for both programs as well. As though you needed more juice to Oklahoma's first ever SEC game and a Tennessee at Oklahoma college football game, but you also factor in how important that one's going to be for the former Oklahoma quarterback turned Tennessee head coach, Josh Heupel.
Yeah, former Heisman Trophy finalist, Josh Heupel.
As a matter of fact, on the ballot for the 2025 College Football Hall of Fame. Josh Heupel, somebody who is he was congratulated on that in a question in the small room today. I don't think there's, not to get into the College Football Hall of Fame argument, although Eli Drinkwitz did talk about Mike Leach's case for inclusion among his answers today and explaining how wrong he believes it is that Mike Leach is excluded from the Hall of Fame on almost a technicality regarding a requirement for a win percentage in a coach's career. To hear those coaches talk about, I mean, yeah, it's you know, a lot of this stuff is really important to them, and yeah, Josh Heupel on the ballot for the, and I think his answer was, it'll be a lot more special if I get in. Someone asked him, how does it feel to be on the ballot for the College Football Hall of Fame, and his answer was, it's nice to be nominated, but it'll be a lot more special if I get in.
Yeah, I love that answer. So, yeah, should have been some entertaining things there. Meanwhile, here in the studio, we've got the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us. Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'll be joining Dan in Texas tomorrow. We've got two ambush events, a lunch in Houston, and then dinner tomorrow evening in Dallas. So flying out of here tomorrow morning and then flying back tomorrow night with Coach Freeze, John Cohen, Bruce Pearl, Coach Kleinard.
Oh, okay.
Among the group that'll be heading out of here tomorrow. So looking forward to that.
That should be a lot of fun. I've learned how well represented Auburn is in the Dallas Metroplex in the last couple of days, and there's quite a bit of whether it's an Auburn alumni presence here or just Auburn fans in the area. I know there was Auburn played at AT&T a couple of years ago, right? So I mean
it was the Oregon game.
The Oregon game was at AT&T, so it's not all that foreign, the territory, but yeah, quite a few Auburn fans in the area, from what I'm told.
I'm told we'll have big crowds at both events tomorrow. So looking forward to that as well.
Andy, Dan was talking about the Tennessee schedule. I think this is Auburn's got Tennessee at a good time. The week after they
Oklahoma.
Yep. Auburn's got Oklahoma at a good time. The week after they host Tennessee, and I know they have an open date, but their next game is Texas, and it's their first SEC road game.
I was listening to some coverage through the day yesterday before you guys were on the air, before Jacob was on the air. I was at an event, and I was at the Birmingham War Eagle Club for lunch yesterday. And listening, I think I was listening to Neuheisel and his bunch on the way home. And they were talking about Oklahoma and Texas joining the league. And they're both obviously outstanding programs, and they're both very good programs, and they're both very good programs right now. The point they made was, okay, so, they've been good enough to beat SEC teams in the past. We saw Texas do it against Alabama last year. But then the next week you've got another SEC team, and I will be fascinated to see how, and it's not just in football, it's in basketball, baseball for certain, mm-hmm. softball for certain, women's basketball, all of these sports, how these two new teams that are both outstanding programs just across the board, but how do they fare week in and week out in the best conference period in the country? It didn't matter what the sport is mm-hmm. at this point. How will they fare week in and week out?
No, it's a fascinating question, and I think for Oklahoma and Texas, those are also a pair of schools coming from a conference that was more known for offense, and I think there's a lot of scrutiny on how the defenses are going to hold up. Are they going to be able to play SEC-caliber defense? Because that's not something, I think for a long time the Big 12 was more known for the offensive side of the football than playing shutdown defense. Now, Texas and Oklahoma have had seasons where they had excellent defenses. You don't advance past the Big 12 into the national championship game if one side is a huge weakness. But I'm curious to see how the defensive side of the football holds up for both Texas and Oklahoma because they're I imagine it's a challenge going from playing in the Big 12 to playing 1 year later in the SEC.
In a couple of weeks, we've got Jason Campbell on the Talking Tigers podcast, and it's all about the 2004 Auburn team.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it comes down to that last. And Don, I'm looking right at Don when I'm talking about this right now.
Hey, Coach.
Hey, buddy.
With us, I take either of those two teams that played for the national championship that year, whether it's Oklahoma or USC, and if they'd have had to play in the Southeastern Conference, I'm not sure either one of them would have been undefeated by the end of the year, like Auburn was, and didn't get a chance to play for the championship. Yeah. That's my opinion. I think a lot of people that root for Auburn agree with that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that.
And I think it's that. I think that's the case now. I'm not saying that they can't. I'm not saying that Texas won't be one of the teams that's going to play for the SEC championship in December. It's a different animal now for these programs in any sport now that they're in the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, and there have. Oh, go ahead, Coach.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was at Texas Tech. I was at Auburn. I'm just going to tell you, I don't care if anybody likes it or not, it is different in the SEC. Every week, the crowds, the stadium, the athletes, the physicality, the defense, the running backs, it's violence. And I'm anxious, like you, Andy, and Bill, and everyone, and Dan. How are they going to hold up every week? And, again, they may run the table, but It's different.
It is.
You would think Texas and Oklahoma would be better positioned to make that adjustment than any other Big 12 school, but there's still the question of what kind of adjustment they're going to make. Texas might do fine. I mean, personnel-wise, you know, one would think they've got one of the three or four best rosters in the league going into this season. You know what game I can't get out of my mind was when they went to Arkansas a couple years ago. And it was just – it was shocking. And I know that was, you know, a couple seasons ago. It was 2021 when – but that – I mean, the way that game just wasn't – I mean, Texas had 3 points at the half. Like, it was shockingly non-competitive. And it was an Arkansas team that won 8 or 9 games that year, so it wasn't as though Texas, you know, went to a bottom feeder in the SEC and lost, in uncompetitive fashion. But, like, that was a game where you would think – you know, a team like Texas should be able to go on the road and pick up wins. And granted, 2 years later, they go and win in Tuscaloosa. So, you know, it's sample size matters here. But you're right. I mean, the question of how you hang up, like Texas or Oklahoma at their best can probably beat anybody in the conference. Will they be at their best every single week in a grind like the one that these two teams are about to embark on?
I agree, Dan. And on the other hand, it has happened, and it happened in a sport that I used to call at Auburn. The first year that Texas A&M was in the Southeastern Conference, they won the SEC in women's basketball. So it has happened in the past. Not to say it won't happen. It may happen this year. I just think it's going to be so much tougher than these two teams have been accustomed to in the past.
Right, but I do agree. I mean, I think they're probably as well prepared as anyone to come in. But it's very difficult for anybody to run the gauntlet of an SEC schedule.
I mean, is Oklahoma's going to be favored to win another softball championship, aren't they?
Yeah.
Regardless of what league they're playing in. This is going to be a fascinating year in the Southeastern Conference.
That first year with A&M in the league, was that the Manziel? That was 2012 with Manziel. I believe that's right. I think it's the Manziel Heisman season. So they were in pretty good position to join the conference. But
they didn't have any trouble here. That in that ball game.
No, I believe I've heard that referred to as an unconditional surrender, yeah. Andy. That 2012 game.
They might have been able to score 100 points.
I'm with you, Bill. I was about to say the exact same thing day. Unfortunately, for all.
You know, another if we're remembering famous games from the past, I was able mention this a little bit on Jacob's show. Was able to talk to Eli Drinkwitz, and I did mention that. You know, the last time he played Auburn was one of the crazier games ever seen. That 2022 win by Auburn.
I doubt he's forgotten that, or any Missouri fans. I mean,
you know what? I've sent Drew his answer. I asked him about, you know, having Auburn back on the schedule, his relationship with Hugh Freeze, and his memories of that 2022 loss at Jordan-Hare. And he, it was insightful. He talks about how he thinks about that game more than he would like to. Because of the lessons he learned the way he said it was the way I repeatedly put my team I repeatedly failed to put my team in a position to win. So I thought it was interesting stuff there, but clearly he has not forgotten the last time Auburn was the opponent.
That was a game where Missouri lost. Auburn didn't necessarily win that game. They did, but Missouri lost that game.
Yes, absolutely.
That game was theirs for the taking. I can understand they will be ready when Auburn rolls into Field this year.
I don't know how many Auburn players will have been on the team for that 2022 game.
Not many at all.
Not many.
I believe the entire roster has turned over since then. But no, certainly for you're talking about Brady Cook and Luther Burden. I mean, a lot of key players for Missouri.
Jarquez may be not the only one that was on that team.
Yeah, I mean it's a small. I mean Tate Johnson. Maybe. I mean, it's a relatively small group, you know, guys that were still there. But it's some key players from Missouri were on the field that day. Luther Burden deleted all of his social media after that game because he felt so bad about what had happened.
That's the same kicker that missed the field goal that would have won it for Missouri. That hit the 61-yarder that won it for them a year ago against Kansas State?
I mean that.
It was later in the season, wasn't
it? Was it Florida or was it? Was it? Didn't he hit a crazy?
I think it was a conference game.
Yes.
Maybe it was Florida.
But that's the same guy that missed that game. Yeah. That would have been a game winner. That last year hit the 61-yarder to win it for Mizzou.
There's also the fumble at the goal line
Oh, Lord.
In that game on what would have been the game-winning score.
Yep, right.
How do you you know, Andy, I'd be curious to know, because I've heard people debate this rule. Do you like it being a turnover if you fumble going into the end zone, or should it be a 15-yard procedure penalty or something? Not as – I mean, I do sort of like the idea that if you're going to force a turnover, you should actually get the ball. You shouldn't get the turnover just because the ball went out of bounds.
I have no trouble with the ruling. None whatsoever.
I at times I kind of wish that was more of a 15.
What about you, Don?
Helped Auburn. Don's
the coach here.
Helped Auburn that day. I like the way it is.
Well, you're a defensive guy.
No kidding. That's
good
true.
They get enough
to help the defense.
They get enough breaks already on the offensive side.
Yeah, you're right about that. All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Dan in Dallas, Bill, Coach Don Dunn, Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, and Drew at the controls here in the studio on the Tuesday Drive.
On ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back, SEC Media Days. Tuesday edition of the drive. We are live in Dallas, Texas at the Omni downtown. As the coverage wrapping up for the day, this is hour six, as Jacob mentioned, of our coverage here on ESPN 106.7. Of course, you've got the Max Roundtable, followed by On the Line and now The Drive, all three of our shows with a presence here on Radio Row, and we're thrilled to welcome in from the Max Roundtable earlier today, Doug Amos.
Hanging out.
How you doing, Doug?
I'm good. I hear you and a bunch of my friends back in Auburn are lined up here this afternoon.
Your old pals in the studio listening in. You can say hi to Bill, Andy, and the coach, Don Dunn. I was saying this was a fun day because you had three Auburn opponents on the schedule. Yesterday it was a little bit more big picture. LSU and Ole Miss are interesting, but not on Auburn's schedule for the first time in decades, so it's a little bit different. But today you had Oklahoma, you had Missouri, you have Georgia, of course, and then I keep thinking it's interesting stuff when you hear from Josh Heupel as well, even if it's not on the schedule.
And you know this, Dan, and I'm sure Coach and Andy and Bill have heard, Kirby Smart made a point to go, let me say this. Talking about how tough it is to play in Jordan-Hare Stadium. I was talking to some guys from Oklahoma earlier, and I was telling them, I said, man, I hope the Flex has that game at night, because if they do, if Auburn's 4-0 and Oklahoma's 3-1 or 4-0, depending on how they do in Knoxville the week before, that needs to be a primetime game. And Oklahoma's not going to know what hit them, I can just tell you.
Well, but Brent Venables is talking about how he's – I mean, Brent Venables has been there. He's been to Auburn in a big game before.
With Clemson.
Back in the Clemson days. So he might have a better understanding than some other folks. Coach Dunn was just talking – you know, he reminisces on his days at Texas Tech. It's different. Is the way he described it. When a Big 12 team is coming into the SEC, that's going to be Oklahoma's first road game as an SEC team. When they come to Auburn, should be gigantic. Somebody else who had complimentary things to say about the atmosphere at Jordan-Hare Stadium was Carson Beck. Carson Beck was asked because Georgia's got road games this year in Tuscaloosa, in Athens, in Oxford. Folks were asking Carson Beck about his experience playing on the road. His first road game,
that's right,
of his career, his first road start was that game at Jordan-Hare this past year, and he remembers it fondly because Georgia was able to come back and win. But he also, you know, he talks about how intimidating that atmosphere was at first, how relentlessly loud and engaged the crowd was throughout, and how they really helped Auburn give Georgia a handful.
Ask everybody a question, Coach and Andy and Bill, and if you don't feel comfortable answering, I understand, but I was really disappointed in Kirby Smart for, first off, disappointed in my brethren in the media for not asking him on national television on the SEC network about the moving violations, 24 since January of 23. He was asked about it in the broadcast journal that you were in there, and he just kind of – I just felt like he kind of blew it off again. I'm disappointed. We got a lot of things in place. I am disappointed, but we got a lot of kids that are playing golf today for a great charity. I think he's deflecting, and I don't know when that deflecting is going to stop unless a tragedy happens, and then he has to.
A tragedy happens again.
Yeah,
I
exactly
would point out because there was that tragedy after the national championship game last year, and I think it was a little disappointing because I did think that I thought that Kirby was going to go in on the mindset of a message still needs to be sent to the locker room. I thought that was sort of, I mean, and I think after the events of last week, it's fair to wonder if the message has been received by everyone in the locker room, and instead it seemed to be much more, we've done, you know, we've gone above and beyond to educate our players about road safety and discouraging reckless driving and things like that. But it does, there did seem to be a disconnect between the frequency with which this happens and Kirby Smart's answer to that question.
I thought people, I've talked with people that thought he would address it in his opening remarks. He did not, and then nobody asked him about it on the SEC network, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it was one of the first questions he took in the electronic media room, and he was, yeah, I think, I mean, defensive is one way to put it. It didn't seem to be, there didn't seem to be any thought of Georgia needs to rethink its plan as far as discouraging, you know, there didn't seem to be a question of whether or not the message is being received. You know, he wanted to talk a lot about the message, but there still seems to be a fair question of whether or not it's been, and it's unfortunate because we're talking about you know, people driving too fast with a football team that's won 24 straight SEC regular season games. Georgia hasn't lost a regular season conference game since the COVID season, and the thought that, you know, a storyline is you have players driving recklessly too often and it has led to a tragedy before and could lead to another one, it seems crazy that it's happening frequently enough that's one of the big questions you want to ask a coach at SEC Media Days, and yet here we are.
No doubt. I don't get it. I'm curious as to how Bill and the guys feel about it back there.
I'd be curious to know if Coach Dunn ever had, you know, was ever on a team that had, multiple issues with players driving recklessly or something preventable like that. And the coaches had to step in and send the message.
I was just talking to Andy and Bill about our old four team. We never, knock on wood, had a lot of problems. I can't remember any really serious things. I'm sure we had a few probably fights and in the bar or something. But as far as the driving and all the speeding and stuff, I don't think a lot of our guys had cars.
Yeah, maybe, so, you know, maybe NIL has changed this a little bit. Maybe the idea that there's money that, you know, now guys can drive Batmobiles in a way that they couldn't, you know, 20 years ago. You know, maybe that's impacted this a little bit.
Yeah, some of the cars are driving a lot faster than those old cars we had.
Well, remember when Cam was here for that 1 year, he had a scooter. He didn't have a car.
I love it. He was going around to high schools to see if he could talk to their kids.
Maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's the answer, Kirby. Maybe just buy 85 scooters.
I mean, I guess if I had a Lamborghini, I would wonder if it could go fast.
Yeah, does it get 150 or not?
You wonder if those numbers on the right side of the speedometer are just there for show, or if you can actually get up there. You know, it's now I sound like Mike Gundy. No, it is shocking that's a storyline that's significant enough that I agree with you, Doug. It probably should have been a question. I'm surprised it wasn't addressed in his opening remarks.
Yep.
I'm surprised he didn't get a question about it in the big room. And I was a little disappointed by his answer in the small room.
Because it was too similar, guys, to his answer last year at SEC Media Days when we first
That's not a problem when you're the defending national champion. You get a bunch of the same questions. Yeah. Anyway, so aside from Georgia, you know, they still enter as I expect them to be the favorite, even though we're in Texas. I think that there's I won't be surprised at all if we're talking about Carson Beck as the best quarterback in college football this year. Even with Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey, some huge pieces moving on, doesn't seem to be that, you know, the questions about Georgia seem to be more related to off-field discipline and issues like that than where is the weakness on the roster, because I think people feel very good about them just about everywhere on both sides of the ball.
I do feel that Carson Beck was not the quarterback that he was with Brock Bowers healthy. If Brock Bowers wasn't in the game or was playing not 100%, then in my mind, Carson Beck was not the same dude. So I do want to see how he does without McConkey and without Bowers. He may be setting sail for all I know, but I want to see how that dynamic plays out.
It's a big piece to take away from a quarterback, especially since in the case of Carson Beck, the sample size is just the 1 year. We did not see him with other personnel. We did not see him without Brock Bowers or anything like that. I mean, a lot of what we're basing it off of is that season last year where he had those outstanding players that aren't there now. Now, some of his players, you know, some of the guys are back. Ra-Ra Thomas, Alabama native, former Mississippi State receiver. He's back after an up-and-down first year at Georgia. Based on what I've seen from Ra-Ra in the past, I won't be shocked at all if he takes a big step forward and looks like one of the best receivers in the country. Played for Ed Rigby back in the Eufaula days. But it's still a Georgia it's a Georgia team. It's surprising that the bigger, and I guess disappointing is another way to put it, that you're you know it's the questions are the more pronounced questions are about stuff like that. The off field discipline.
Then a couple of things and guys about Oklahoma today. One, Brent Venables needs to cut down on the caffeine. Okay, he's a little high strung for me.
Wired up, man. I love it.
Man.
You want a defensive coordinator?
I love it.
With some juice.
He looked like he presented himself today like he was on the sidelines as the defensive coordinator at Clemson, which is pretty cool. But Jackson Arnold here at SEC Media Days before he's ever started a conference game, started the bowl game, right? And played a lot in that. But here's a guy that they're confident enough to bring to face the media. And what do we really know about him? Everybody I've talked to involved with Oklahoma thinks he's going to be an absolute super stud. That remains to be seen. They also told me, Dan and fellas, that Dylan Gabriel's departure from Oklahoma, while not probably encouraged, was not overly fought against by the coaching staff. I don't know how y'all feel about that.
I mean, Dylan Gabriel was one of the more sought-after transfers. I have to imagine Oklahoma would have loved the problem of keeping Dylan Gabriel and having a competition between Gabriel and Arnold. But, I mean, the point you just made, Jackson Arnold has 69 career attempts as a college football quarterback, and he's at SEC Media Days representing the Oklahoma Sooners. Yeah. That is a rapid rise.
A big
from,
deal.
You know, and that's a guy who didn't play. I mean, he appeared in seven games but wasn't the quarterback in most of even those seven games. And, I mean, the thought that, you know, he's expectations are high for a guy who, played sparingly as a true freshman and is now has big shoes to fill at Oklahoma.
Who knows what he was promised? I have no idea. But if Gabriel stays for another year and doesn't run off to Oregon – What's Jackson Arnold thinking about?
What color jersey is Jackson Arnold wearing?
Yeah, he could leave immediately, right?
Yeah,
I
mean,
I don't know. But Dylan Gabriel's among the top guys in the Heisman discussion at Oregon already.
There was a great question for Eli. Someone was asking, they noted a couple of quarterbacks, Brady Cook.
I loved this answer.
Oh, yeah.
So,
Eli was asked about a couple of quarterbacks who'd stuck it out and we're now the starting quarterback because they didn't leave. Guys like Brady Cook, guys like Garrett Nussmeier,
Eli goes, yeah, yeah, and the guy goes, is this a trend? No,
no, of course. He's like, oh, do you think this will lead to more quarterbacks sticking around and waiting their turn instead of going in the portal? And Eli said, absolutely not. There's 9 or 10 guys that are starting in the SEC that did leave and went somewhere else, and that's why they're the starter. And it's a great story when a Brady Cook or a Garrett Nussmeier Arch Manning, next year potentially, like when guys like that bide their time and become the starters. That's really cool to see, if it pays off. But in this day and age, when teams are playing one quarterback, if you're not that quarterback and you want to be that quarterback for somebody, it's understandable that guys are exploring their options in the portal.
Hey, Andy, I wanted to ask you a question. Have they moved your box at Jordan-Hare to a more favorable position?
No, it'll be the same spot.
And will it always be? I thought I'd read something where that was changing. Is that not right?
I have not heard anything.
Okay. Well, you would hear way before me.
I always tell them, I will broadcast wherever you put me.
I understand.
Period.
I get it.
Doug Amos from the Max Roundtable. Folks have been able to check out your show here on ESPN 106.7 from 11 to 2. You've had some outstanding guests.
We've had a lot of fun.
Yeah, you've had some outstanding folks drop by.
Just visited with Heather Dennett. She'll be – I'll play that tomorrow. Had a great visit with Rick Neuheisel. He's a super, super interview. Peter Burns.
You think Neuheisel would sign my UCLA student ID?
I think he would. Do you have it in your
wallet?
Yeah,
I got it with me right now.
You should absolutely have him sign it. Hey, Coach, I'm still looking for some sort of smoke signal when the brisket goes on the grill, bro.
Okay, buddy. You know, we're opening a new building here in probably about 15 days. So I'll send up, like, when the Pope's elected.
Yes.
Yeah, gotta have it.
Okay? You didn't gotta think I knew anything about the Pope, did you?
Oh, baby.
Love, an old love, Southern boy.
Oh, man. Coach Don Dunn knows all about the Vatican. I love it.
I was just there.
Andy was just there.
I was just there.
And Burcham was just there.
Yes, I was. There was no smoke going up that day.
That looked like a fun trip, Andy, I'll tell you that.
Brisket was
fabulous.
The brisket was off the smoker that day.
It was a Friday. There was fish.
The Italian brisket was not on the smoker that day.
It was fried.
Hey, guys, I appreciate y'all letting me jump on. I'll be back on at 11. You're heading to your seventh hour, to our seventh hour today here in just a short while, and we'll crank it up again the next 2 days.
Appreciate it, Doug.
Take care.
Doug Amos from the Max Roundtable. Do we need to take a break, Bill?
Yeah, we're a few minutes behind. Go ahead and roll the music.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, we will do that. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, you can join in as well. Dan and Dallas, Bill, Don, and Andy here in the studio. And you can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390, or text us on the Drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, who also sponsor the podcasts of the Drive. Right back with more here on day two of SEC Media Days on the Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Tuesday Drive, live from SEC Media Days. Dan Peck on Radio Row. I was just joined by Doug Amos from the Max Roundtable. A lot of our old friends wandering around. I saw Jake Crane right when we started the show. Barrett Salee has been rampaging around Radio Row as well. So we'll try to catch up with both of those guys. Also got a lot of audio today from the different folks that we were able to talk to. A lot of questions I was able to get up in the small room aimed at three coaches who will be facing Auburn this year: Kirby Smart, Brent Venables, and Eli Drinkwitz, as well as Tennessee's Josh Heupel and the players that those four coaches brought with them to SEC Media Days.
Yeah, it looked like a very interesting day of with like I was saying a while ago. I mean, boy, these are teams that won a lot of games last year, and their fan bases expect them to win a lot more again this year. What all kind of audio do you have that we might be able to get to?
I asked Brent Venables and Eli Drinkwitz about getting ready for the Auburn game on a schedule full of different intriguing matchups. The Tennessee offensive lineman Cooper Mays had some cool stuff to say. You can sort of relate to Auburn about young offensive linemen, you know, and what they need to do to get ready. He's a center who had to make that transition. Auburn has Connor Liu, who played quite a bit last year, but is still in his first offseason as a starter. Cooper Mays also talked about the amount of experience Tennessee has coming back, and how that's a luxury in this day and age to have an offensive line full of guys that have played together for multiple years, and how that can be a benefit as the season goes on.
Well, that's good. Once again, Dan is in Dallas there at the Omni, the side of the SEC Media Days, halfway done, as eight teams have now met with the media, and there will be four more tomorrow and four, including Auburn, on Thursday.
Do you want to hear? Do you want to hear John McDade talk about horns down? Because that's another one that was kind of interesting. John McDade,
director,
Drew should have that audio recently sent to the Twitter account. Drew, you should have John McDade's. You know, was asked about the Big 12's rule regarding horns down and how the SEC will approach it, and he talked about what he's the guidance he's given officials about that particular gesture.
All right, Drew's still looking for it. We'll get to that shortly. While we've got Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, here with us. Yeah, Andy, yesterday came the news about Auburn basketball adding Purdue to the schedule for a couple of years, including a matchup in December in Birmingham.
21st in Birmingham at Legacy Arena. Should be a great battle there. And then Auburn goes to, I think, Indianapolis to play Purdue next season. And then just real quickly, and I know you've got this coming up, I cannot remember a year where the Major League Baseball draft has affected Auburn's recruiting any less than we have seen this year, Bill. I think they may get that entire class in.
It is amazing. Brian Matthews was there yesterday, and we were following along, and it's like, where are these guys? Because there had been the expectation that two or three could be taken in the first seven or eight rounds.
Like it is every year.
Right.
Not this year.
So that is great. I mean, with Cooper McMurray returning, the addition of the big Florida left-hander, I think Auburn fans should really be excited about the upcoming baseball season.
Real quick story.
Yeah.
I met his folks today.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Apparently, on his official visit, his mother was not able to come. So his parents were on campus, and they were kind of getting the campus tour, the mother was. So I met them. I was at the arena for another thing. And met them, and so was talking to them just a little bit. And she played basketball at Tennessee Tech. I said, when did you play? 89 to 92. I said,
Yeah.
I said, well, you remember in the 89-90 season, Auburn played Tennessee Tech twice.
Mm-hmm.
Lost to Tennessee Tech in Vegas, and then beat Tennessee Tech in the first round of the NCAA tournament at Auburn. Well, she was playing on that team. I called those games. For Auburn.
That's great, yeah.
So we were reminiscing about her playing days at Tennessee Tech.
Yeah, that's right when you started.
Yeah, so it was my second year.
Yeah.
Second year doing women's basketball. So, yeah.
That's cool stuff. Andy Burcham with us.
I'm gone. You guys have this one handled today.
Well, no, I'm glad you came in. Yeah. Like I said, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to be awake for the whole time. Not that it's not exciting, Dan, or anything. No, I had a little confrontation with some Yellow Jackets
and
the Benadryl.
And we're not talking Georgia Tech.
No, I'm not talking Georgia Tech. I'm talking much meaner than Georgia Tech. Those things. I'll tell you what. If Georgia Tech was ever that mean, they'd really, really be tough.
Yeah. Georgia's been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, no kidding. But the Benadryl that I take, has a tendency to slow you down a little bit. But Andy, man, thanks for stopping.
My pleasure.
What's on the docket? What all's coming up?
Yeah, I've got Ambush tomorrow in Houston at lunch, and then we'll be in Dallas tomorrow evening. Coach Freeze will stay for his media days appearance on Thursday. Talking Tigers podcast this week is with Jordan Szabo, the new women's tennis coach. Next week it's Greg Williams, Hall of Fame former equestrian head coach.
Saw him just Saturday.
Yeah, and then in 3 weeks down the road, Jason Campbell talks about the 2004, 20 years since that 2004 season, Don.
Ooh.
Yeah, how about that?
Time flies.
19.
Yeah. So that's what's coming up, and we'll be starting Tiger Talk on August 19th. Football this season will be going to a Monday night on Tiger Talk.
That's good
during the football season.
That's great. I like it. I like it actually better on Monday night.
We'll find out.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andy.
My pleasure,
appreciate
guys.
You stopping in.
Thank you.
Travels.
Good to see you all.
All right. I tell you what. We'll go ahead and get to our final break of hour number one. We've got calls. We have audio. We've got Dan in Dallas. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
MPAC Live presents.
You did a little while ago, but the audio. Drew found the audio.
All right, so yeah, I think the McDade horns down answer would be an interesting one. I definitely want to play Venables and Drinkwitz at some point, maybe an hour or two, talking about the Auburn game and their impressions of the Auburn program and Hugh Freeze. But I think you guys might get a kick out of John McDade talking about how the SEC is going to handle horns down this year.
If it's going to be an issue, the signal, it's going to be under the playing rules front, sportsmanlike conduct. And we've talked a lot about that. In our officiating group since I've taken over in the 2020 season. And to be unsportsmanlike conduct, I'm asking my officials to use a framework of judgment where the act to be a foul needs to be in one of three buckets. It needs to be taunting an opponent, it needs to be a travesty of the game, or it needs to otherwise compromise our ability to manage the game. What's a travesty of the game, right? It's just a phrase. I ask my officials, the act itself needs to be offending to the senses. If you took that act out of a football stadium and did it in a shopping mall or a grocery store, would it offend the senses to a majority of the reasonable people in the area, right? That signal would not, right? You might have some people that share that signal with you if you did that at a grocery store or in a shopping mall, depending where you are. So it's very much we're going to evaluate it in context. I could see a scenario. I want to be very cautious about using hypotheticals, right? But I could see a scenario where an opponent of Texas makes a big play in celebrating with his teammates, possibly going back to the sideline. They're giving the signal. It's not taunting. It's not making a travesty of the game. It's not affecting our ability to manage the game.
Oh, I figured Dan would bring it back in after that. But, yeah, that's interesting. I agree with that. I mean, I'm sure it will bother Texas people. But, it's not something that is either offensive or, a travesty. That was pretty funny, a travesty to the game.
And enough about the 2022 Missouri game, right? We're talking about travesties to the game.
Really?
But I think that's probably the right way to do it. I mean, it's the gesture itself does not raise to the level of taunting, but if it's something that you direct at the other team's sideline or direct in a player's face, you know, I think just like a lot of other gestures, you know, that could raise to the level of penalty. And there was another answer where John McDade, he referenced the Gator chomp. You know, he said it's not unique, you know, that there's a hand gesture in this conference that one team uses and a lot of other teams use to taunt or poke at that team. And I think that, you know, it's not an automatic penalty to do the Gator chomp if you do something successful against Florida, and it probably shouldn't be an automatic penalty to hit Texas with the horns down unless as McDade said, it gets to the level of taunting or a travesty to the game.
So there is the first loss by Texas in the Southeastern Conference. Because I mean, they I was more than a little surprised that the Big 12, you know, made it an automatic penalty when somebody did horns down.
Yeah, you know, like a lot of people said, Texas kind of had their way in that conference. Welcome to the SEC. If that's all they have to worry about in this league, that's good.
If that's their worst loss in the next
they'll take it.
They'll probably be in a pretty good position for the playoff. But it's an outstanding. I thought John McDade does a great job. Like he's really clear. He's thoughtful. If there's time, we could play his answer about evaluating officials because he mentioned, you know, he's also the director of officiating for the Sun Belt, oversees Sun Belt officiating and evaluates Sun Belt referees to potentially move up to the SEC. I was curious to know, you know, what are you looking for in a Sun Belt referee who could maybe move up to the SEC someday. But John McDade was he was wonderful.
We've got a call. Let's go ahead and get to it on the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Jerry gets us started. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I've watched most of the Major League Baseball draft last night, and I just wondered how bad did we get hurt?
Not at all yesterday. Not at all. Really? That's the crazy thing. Chase Alsup went to the Orioles in the fourth round, and Tanner Bauman, I believe, was a ninth round pick by the Yankees. Today, Will Cannon was drafted in the 12th round by the Reds. So that's it. And like Andy was saying a few minutes ago, none of Auburn's signees or transfers have been drafted, at least as of yet. That's great news for Butch Thompson and for Auburn baseball.
Glad to hear it. Thanks.
Something we were worried about going into the draft is, I mean, there were a couple of Auburn players with eligibility remaining or were draft eligible that might move on. Cooper was the guy I think we talked about the most.
Right.
Of your draft eligible in the draft returnees, but you got the announcement from Cooper. Was that back on Sunday?
That
he made it clear he's going to play another year of college football, and then from that point on, didn't seem like Auburn took too many hits.
No, not nearly as many as Ingrid last night at the at the home run derby.
What a sad story that is.
Really, it really is. I mean, for folks that haven't heard today, she came out today and apologized, saying that she was inebriated at the time and is entering rehab.
Well, I'm not laughing. That's sad. But
if that's what it takes for her to realize and to get help. Then something good came out of it, but that
yeah,
was,
absolutely.
I mean, it was bizarre.
It
in the
really
moment,
was,
and didn't become more clear when you watched it again and again afterward. But yeah, all the best to her, because that's I was thinking in the moment, boy, she's never going to be able to go back on the internet ever again.
You're not
after that one.
No. What'd you think of the home run derby?
Hey, Neuheisel did come by and sign my Bruin card.
Oh, cool.
By the way, so my old student ID does rock a Rick Neuheisel autograph now on the
He should have grabbed YouTube. Him and made him sit there with you for a couple of minutes
I talked to him a little bit during the commercial. He's got somewhere to be. I'm gonna try to get him. He's here all 4 days.
Yeah.
So we'll try to sit down with Neuheisel. He was on Doug's show yesterday.
He is great. He really is.
He's wonderful and has a really good perspective on things. I'm going to look forward to. He's still going to be a big part of the of college football coverage at CBS. Although we're not going to see as much of him in the SEC anymore with the SEC moving to ESPN.
No, you got Jake coming up.
Jake Crane is sitting right across from me. He will put on a headset when we start hour two.
Sounds good. Right back with the second hour of the show. Stick with us.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Our final hour of live coverage today from SEC Media Days, ESPN 106.7, seven straight hours of coverage with the Max Roundtable with Doug Amos. You got On the Line with Jacob, and then The Drive taking you from 4 to 6 here on Tuesday. Exciting day here in Dallas as we were able to talk with three Auburn opponents, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Missouri, three teams on Auburn's schedule today. And then you've also got the Tennessee Volunteers with Coach Heupel presenting today, and it was I thought it was a really informative day. A lot of interesting folks taken to the podium. Always love hearing from Eli Drinkwitz, a fun perspective about things. Kirby Smart, coming in feels a little bit more like his league with Nick Saban having retired and Kirby Smart riding a very impressive regular season win streak into this upcoming season. They haven't lost a regular season SEC game since the COVID year back in 2023. Straight 8-0 regular seasons for the Georgia Bulldogs. Now they'll play at Texas, at Alabama, and at Ole Miss. So if they're going to finish this season 8-0 in the regular season, it will be quite an accomplishment. Four straight years if they do that. Four straight years ago. You graduate a guy who didn't lose a
conference regular season game.
Didn't lose an SEC regular season game potentially at the University of Georgia. We'll see if they can do that this year. But I thought there was a lot of really cool stuff. We'll play some of the clips for you a little bit later on. Definitely want to shout out all of our sponsors who are helping make this thing helping make this trip available. Bill, you got the sponsors in front of you?
I was gonna
let you do the orthopedic clinic because it's hour number two.
I was gonna mention that folks can get through to us, but yes, hour number two of The Drive is brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. I will be visiting Dr. Wilson tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Or Ortho Clinic, one of our sponsors for SEC Media Day's coverage, along with the Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, Roots Real Estate, Wisdom Law Firm, State Farm Agent Callie Bryan Chadwick, and University Ace Hardware. Big shout out to everybody helping put this show on the road in Dallas this week and provide this coverage. Bill, on a Tuesday in hour number two, we usually talk with Jake Crane, don't we?
Yeah, usually get him around the bottom of the hour. We're fortunate to have him early today.
How you doing, Jake?
Man, I'm doing fantastic. So many changes, going on in college athletics. And The SEC is not exempt from that with Texas and Oklahoma, but, you know, like I've been saying since I got here, you know, I feel like it's a good fit because they're just as nuts as we are.
Oh, they fit right in.
Yeah, they're definitely invited to the cookout.
Yeah, Oklahoma and Texas fit. They fit right in here in the SEC. And yeah, we go from 14 deep to 16 strong, as the SEC has branded it. And I guess brand would be the operative word, because you got guys walking around in cowboy hats.
In the 10-gallon or
branded,
larger hats.
Branded yeah. cowboy hats.
Look, now that everything's, you know, it's kind of the Wild West, and look, I'm glad that guys are able to monetize their name, image, and likeness, just like I'm glad I'm able to monetize my name, image, and likeness. But probably, Bill, the thing that, and we talked about this on our show a couple weeks ago, that we found out today, speaking of NIL, was that the Georgia players with this, you know, the stuff on the road and get in trouble aren't going to be suspended from games. They're going to get money taken away from their NIL collectives.
So, now, that is a deterrent.
Yeah, like, to me, you hit somebody in the wallet, and I wonder, Bill, it got me thinking, nobody asked Mike Gundy if Ollie Gordon was going to get money taken away. They just asked if he was going to be suspended from games. But to me, that's better. That sends a bigger message in my
mind. That hits where it really hurts.
Although, Mike Gundy's not supposed to be the one in charge of who's receiving what from the NIL collectives, right? That's supposed to be kept at an arm's length and the collective. But it is interesting to think, I mean, if you're an athlete with sponsors and you get in legal trouble, your sponsors could have something to say about, you know, there could be financial penalties. You could lose sponsors over stuff like that. And that really hasn't been talked about very much amid the Georgia thing. There's been a lot of focus on, well, what does Kirby Smart need to do? What does Georgia need to do? But you're right. Now, I mean, you wonder if, and it's not necessarily on the NIL collectives themselves, but you would think someone who wants to get into the business of sponsoring college athletes, you do wonder if a financial penalty, a morals clause, or the expectation that you'll stay out of legal trouble would be part of that NIL deal.
Yeah, well, you know, my thing, Dan, is, I mean, at the end of the day, first off, to the head coaching part, yeah, technically they're not supposed to, but technically we weren't supposed to have collectives. Technically it was supposed to be, if Dr. Pepper wanted to do a deal with Bryce Young, his people reached out to Bryce Young's people. That's not what happened. They've pooled all this money together. So in my opinion, it is actually being taken away from the collective, because they are the ones that are listening to the people that matter. Because if you want to spend money on a recruit, the head coach is going to have to sign off on spending that money on a recruit. But again, what it does two things for me. One, I think it is more effective than losing playing time. We got people that opt out of bowl games now. And number two, it gives me some semblance of hope that maybe structurally, from a contract standpoint, these NIL deals aren't as just one-sided as what we thought they were. And I thought we were going to have to wait until there was this breakaway from the Power Five into this Super League, where when you sign a letter of intent to go play at a quote-unquote Power Four, Power Five, whatever school, that you sign up for their rules and what would happen under the collectives and the contracts of said school.
We do sort of have the idea that it's a transaction that involves a big bag with a dollar sign on it.
Yeah.
Right?
And the Monopoly guy holding it.
Yes. I mean, so maybe there's a little bit more, maybe it's a little bit more nuanced than that, than this Georgia thing. Again, it's the thought that you're talking about a team that was very close to going to the playoff again last year. 24 straight SEC, more than 24. I don't think they lost the last one, but they've three straight years where they go 8-0 in regular season play. And we're talking about traffic violations, because they've reached the point where it becomes a real issue for the program.
Yeah. Well, look, it's
a
one
perception
thing.
Issue, and but not just a perception issue. Also, I mean, I think folks would remind you, like, it's also a safety issue.
Yeah. Well, it's at some point, you know, guys, people make mistakes, right? Human beings are not perfect, but you keep making the same mistake, and not only that, some people died because of a similar type of mistake. So I'm wondering, at what point are they just not listening to Kirby? It's hard for me to believe that, because you see the control he has with them on the field and the way that they operate. So I know he's talked about it. They've had speakers come in and talk about it. But yet you're still going to go out street racing, and you're still going to go out and do this. So is it more of a they don't fear repercussion, or they don't fear what the coach is saying? To me, that's a bigger problem, but it's hard for me to believe that, because I know how
Kirby's contention seemed to be, we're sending a message. And I think the bigger question is that message being received?
Obviously
is it being heard? And that,
yeah.
And that's because, I mean, we had Doug Amos on in the first hour, and he was talking about the disappointment in Kirby's answer in the small room to that question, because it did seem to be – Kirby seemed to be defensive in pointing out, well, these are the things we're doing as a program to stop it. And it's the question of is that working? Is that message being received? Because it does. I mean, it happened recently enough to become an issue yet again.
Yeah. Well, it's like when they say, hey, listen, we're doing everything we can to fix the economy, and this is what we're doing to fix it. Yet prices keep going higher. Like at some point, like you got to change the play. You got to mix it up. Maybe what you're doing is not working. Which is probably the only thing Kirby Smart has done at Georgia that isn't working, Dan.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane & Company here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive live from SEC Media Days. The afternoon slate, Oklahoma and Missouri, a pair of teams that will play Auburn. Oklahoma, their first. Old Big Eight teams. Oklahoma's first SEC road game will be at Jordan-Hare Stadium. First time Oklahoma has ever been to Jordan-Hare Stadium. I was able to ask Brent Venables about that. We'll run that answer a little bit later on, but I'd love your thoughts on Oklahoma coming into the league and especially that game at the end of September when Oklahoma comes to Jordan-Hare.
Yeah, well, you know, I think sometimes, and when we get to talking about this, and it's, you know, the height of talking season really right now, you know, we sit here and say, all right, Oklahoma, you can't overlook these games. Well, it doesn't matter if we think they may overlook them. It doesn't matter if the fans at Oklahoma think they may overlook them. I don't think Brent Venables is going to overlook anybody. I don't think those players are going to overlook anybody. But when I look at Oklahoma and you just look at the way the roster is put together in this certain spot of time, you have a brand new starting quarterback who I think is very talented, but he's brand new and he's young. You had to replace your whole offensive line. This will be your first road game, and it is at Jordan-Hare, which is one of the toughest places to play in the country, and it's going to have to be a learning experience for Jackson Arnold. And if there's a game that he's probably going to make a lot of mistakes in, this is probably going to be the one. And if you flip it on its head.
Was Carson Beck's worst game last year?
Yeah, Carson Beck told Jackson Arnold. He's like, this place is cursed. It's a nightmare. Now, when you look at this game for Auburn, there's a legitimate chance, Dan, and Bill, that Auburn could be 4-0 and undefeated in this game. There's a decent chance.
It would be disappointing if Auburn wasn't 4-0. That means they dropped the Cal game or the Arkansas game.
And then there's a decent chance Oklahoma may be undefeated going into this game, which means there's a decent chance College Game Day could be going to Auburn, Alabama, for a ranked matchup in Oklahoma's first road SEC game in Jordan-Hare.
From the moment Oklahoma joined the league, and certainly from the moment we learned the 2024 schedules, and we found out that Oklahoma was going to make the trip to Auburn, first time they've ever played at Jordan-Hare, we knew it was going to be one of those. I mean, you think about historic, and granted they haven't gone that well for Auburn in the past when a historic program comes to Jordan-Hare for the first time. I was there for SC in 2003. I was there for Penn State a couple of years ago. Like, these ones haven't gone well. Auburn's due. Auburn's due in one of these.
And Dan, it could set up Auburn's seat. Like, again, if we're saying Auburn can get to 8 wins, possibly 9, if you're going to get there, if you look at the back half of the schedule, you're probably going to have to start 5-0.
Well, the path to 8 is either win all your home games or drop a home game and win at Kentucky.
Yeah.
Like, that seems to be the path to 8. Now, that also raises the question of, I mean, you've also got a game in Columbia, Missouri. That Auburn, now Missouri's going in with the biggest expectations I think they've ever had as an SEC program, with a lot of returning impact players coming off of a team that did very well last year. And they will play Auburn for the first time since the damnedest thing I've ever seen. That 2022 game.
Dude.
That 2022 game at Auburn, which both Brady Cook and Eli Drinkwitz talked about. I was the one who brought it up.
I almost felt bad for him, Dan. I'm an Auburn fan.
I did sort of feel bad when Brady Cook laid a bit of a guilt trip on me and did say, thanks for bringing that one up during his answer.
Yeah.
He was kidding, but he wasn't.
That's when you wake up in the middle of the night like, oh, God.
Eli Drinkwitz. He didn't say he still has nightmares, but he does say he thinks about that game far more often than he would like to, and he thinks about the lessons he learned and the mistakes he made that day a lot in the years since. And he, you know, I think he's tried to spin it into a positive in his learning experience. Missouri wouldn't be where they are now if they hadn't had to go through that sort of adversity.
Auburn's glad that they could help in that fact.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's really no other way to spin it. We're going to be like, man, God, I hate coaching now.
Just think about this. I mean, there's
pull the plug.
It's the worst.
There's no coach anywhere. There's no coach anywhere who doesn't, you know, think you can't help think about the things that didn't go right. It's harder sometimes to remember the good times than it is the bad, the wins. I mean, sure, you remember them, but you just can't get those terrible losses out of your head, can you, Don?
No, it lives with you. I can still remember games that we lost over the last 30 years that affect you. And don't It's just hard. It's hard to explain, but it just gets in your gut. It eats at you. You think, what if, and what if, you know?
Yeah. Coach, and too, I think that's what makes football so special as well. And you know, you look at basketball, you play so many regular season games. You look at baseball, you mm-hmm. play regular so right. many regular season
right.
games. You know, in football, you put in all this work, and nobody knows better than you, Coach Dunn, but like you put in all this work and all this time and all this effort, and you get 12 shots at it. And if you have something that's gut-wrenching during a football regular season, it just hits different, man.
Yeah, hey, you're exactly right. You know, and like you said, basketball, baseball, hockey, whatever, mm-hmm. you may lose on a Saturday night, and you've got to turn around and play Monday night.
Yeah.
So it hurts. Don't get me wrong. It kills you. But you have a chance to get that bitter taste out of your mouth. Where in football, like you said, you have 6 days to hopefully get it out of your system. But you're human, and you don't.
Yeah, I screwed up that thing we were talking about, the 2022 Missouri game, because I've also blocked a lot of it out of my memory. That ball did not go through the end zone. Caden Bridges recovered that game because Missouri didn't just have a missed chip shot that would have won it in regulation.
Dude, they blew it.
They
man.
Also like, had they also
they
had
blew
the,
it multiple times.
Yes, they had the reaching out for the walk off touchdown in overtime. The ball is knocked out at the 1 yard line. Caden Bridges jumps on it, touchback, and that's the ball game. That was the last play.
You know the Auburn Auburn fan in me was happy. But just the football guy in me, I hurt for those guys.
Oh, it was, and it was also, I think we can look back. I mean, Bill, stop me if I'm wrong. If Missouri had won that game, it might have been Brian Harsin's final game at Auburn that day.
It felt like it.
It felt like it, and the fact that, well, you won, so you can't make a coaching change, but you didn't feel like the ice.
Here's the way Eli could spin it. You know, him lose, them blowing that game put Auburn in deeper trouble because Harsin stayed longer. There's the way you spin
that's,
it.
That's true.
And they almost won the LSU game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just a couple of weeks later, they almost beat Jaden Daniels at LSU. And, you know,
yeah, there's another quarterback that struggled visiting Jordan-Hare.
There's another quarterback that did not, you're absolutely right, did not have a good game at all. As Garrett Nussmeier talked about yesterday when he mentioned, I mean, that was one of the games where Nussmeier went in mm-hmm. for Jaden Daniels in 2022 because LSU's offense wasn't really able to.
Was awful that day.
He was awful. Yeah, it was shocking. And I mean, they finally started running the ball a little bit with him in the final quarters to get things going. But through the air, they got absolutely nothing that day out of their quarterbacks.
Well, I wish that was the LSU quarterback that could have played bad in Jordan-Hare that transferred to Auburn and not the other one.
Yeah,
no kidding.
And you know what? That was also probably the last average to below average game Jaden Daniels ever played.
Then all of a sudden he just figured it out. It helps when you have Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. in that offensive line.
It helps, but I think some of it might have been Jaden Daniels being an absolute.
You know, he's a freak show.
Last year. Yeah, no, that Oklahoma game. I mean, the Missouri game. Like you've got a couple of big ones. That, you know, not with traditional Auburn opponents, but I think those two games are. I mean, those are two of the swing games on Auburn's schedule. What can you do at home against Oklahoma? Like you said, there's a chance both teams are 4-0, and that's one of the marquee games of the day in college football. And then a little bit later on, the week after, is it Georgia bye week? Missouri, I believe, is the schedule for Auburn.
I think it's bye week after Oklahoma, then Georgia, right? Unless I'm mistaken, I may be wrong on that.
I think it's Georgia bye week. I think we played.
It is Georgia then bye week then. Okay. Then at Missouri.
Well, either way, that
you've got the bye week in between the trips to Athens and Columbia.
Now there is one thing that may prevent game day. The hypothesis you had. Pretty sure Georgia's in Tuscaloosa.
They are.
Oh yeah,
they
okay.
are.
Well, never
pretty
mind. Maybe the like SEC Nation.
Maybe
A&M. Or maybe I'll just show up and walk around.
Yeah, maybe you'll be there. But I'm pretty sure Georgia's in Tuscaloosa that same day.
Yeah, so that one's gonna be. So they're pretty big.
But Auburn Oklahoma's. I mean,
Auburn Oklahoma is definitely the second biggest game
right
now.
But like that one's like the Death Star.
What do you think? I mean, Georgia's got Bama, Texas, and
Georgia
on the road.
Yeah, and Kentucky. As a matter of fact, Kentucky's their easiest road game.
4-0 on the road this year.
I don't think anybody's going undefeated in the SEC this year. Are in the regular season. I just don't see it. If anybody can do it, I mean, it's not some crazy hot take to say Georgia can't. But I feel like there's more parity at the top of the SEC this year than we've seen in so long. How many times, Dan, have we seen this amount of teams? I could go through them. Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, Missouri, and there's always somebody that's sneaky. Will that be Tennessee? Will somebody else kind of come out?
I think LSU's
Raptors?
In that conversation LSU's with those five teams on his list.
LSU improves on defense.
Nussmeier plays well, and they can play a lick of defense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's. I mean, that's six teams.
That's six.
You haven't mentioned Oklahoma.
Yeah, typically, it's been
the 110 a year ago.
Oklahoma won 10 games and beat Texas last year.
Yeah, Oklahoma ain't winning this.
I know, but you just mentioned six teams.
Yeah,
ten win team that beat Texas last year isn't one
of them.
That's crazy.
But the SEC's top heavy, Dan. Don't listen to them. They're top heavy.
They're top heavy and middle heavy.
They're just heavy
and middle heavy and bottom heavy. I mean,
outside of Vanderbilt, which we have to just point at and say, hey, we care about school too. I mean, it's a bloodbath.
Your vote for the SEC, which two teams will you have in the SEC championship game?
Well, I will say, I don't make official predictions, and I think Coach Donald will get a kick out of this. I don't make official predictions until the end of fall camp. I need to know who gets hurt,
okay,
who wins the job, and who gets arrested.
Subject to change. But if you had to vote now.
Yeah. I would say to me, I actually think that Ole Miss plays Georgia twice.
Ooh.
Wow.
You like that Ole Miss schedule.
Yeah, look, yeah. I think
and you like the team.
I think the team's ability to handle.
Well,
I think Ole Miss, what worries me the most about Ole Miss is can they handle legitimate high expectations? Because this is the most complete team that Ole Miss has had since I can remember because, you know, they're not going to be Swiss cheese on defense. And they weren't last year. They were number one in the conference in turnover margin. They were top three in the conference in backfield disruption rate, which is a huge stat, a humongous stat. And they've only gotten better defensively. And I never worry about landing them on offense. But you get George at home, I'm telling you, man.
You think it's going to be Shark Week every week down in down in Oxford?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Shark Week a lot of weeks.
You think it's going to be Shark Week quite often? So, and that's I think Juice Wells is maybe the single biggest pickup anybody got in the portal.
He's got to stay healthy, but yeah,
he's got to stay healthy.
Hell, I have to stay healthy.
I mean, look now, Quinshon Judkins is one of the biggest losses anybody had in the portal because he's maybe the best running back.
But you know what?
Football.
But you know what? I would rather lose a running back than a left tackle or a pass rusher any day of the week.
I think it's the thought that they're a little bit more replaceable even at the highest level. Yeah, I understand that.
Although, look at the NFL.
Although replacing Quinshon Judkins with one player is going to be tough, but maybe Ole Miss still going to be able to run the ball. And I love the Juice Wells pickup.
It's
not an offense that needed that much more explosion. They picked up one of the most explosive skill position players in the conference.
You know, it's Lane Kiffin's like a kid in a candy store with all these weapons. I mean, I was talking to Jackson Dart, on Crane Company earlier, and, man, you can just see it in his eyes when you talk about the personnel on this team. And not only that, the guys they've added on defense, because nobody understands how important a good defense is than the quarterback.
You know how you can tell the Juice Wells departure stings is that absolutely nobody in South Carolina wanted to answer Juice Wells' questions yesterday.
Usually
there's a we wish him well. They can remember the fond, the things he did well as a game. There was none of that yesterday.
Well,
it was a lot of wish him the best, but we're focused on our team. Very terse. Well, I would say was the how's the what do you think of Juice Wells staying in the conference and going to Ole Miss?
Well, I don't know what terse means, Dan. You're smarter than me, but I will say it's one thing. It's one thing when your dad says, hey, guys, I'm going to get some milk, and then he never comes back. You never see him again. It's another thing when your dad says, hey, I'm going to go get some milk, and he moves in with the girl right down the street.
Brief, concise, or curt is how I would.
Well, Kurt was my father's name.
There you go.
I don't know where we're going down here, but I do know brief
and concise. That's his uncle's, brief and concise. Right.
Yeah, yeah. He works for the CIA.
I love it. All right, we're talking with Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Jake, tell everybody how they can find the outstanding work you do.
Yeah, man, it's really easy. First off, thanks for having me on. As usual, always love chopping up with you guys. Yeah, man, the easiest way is to go to YouTube, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. We're full bore football in general, college football, NFL, everything that's going on right now, and what's going to be the biggest changeover year that we've ever seen in the sport of college football, and I'm excited about it.
See you at bowl games later on.
Yeah, I'm coming for you,
Dan. We're going to do some football bowling for tonight's festivity.
I think they call that basketball in Australia.
I'm going to get that. Yeah, I got to get the shoulder loose.
Yeah, Dan, look, I know you got to rock. They say you're the Joe Milton of media days.
Jake Crane, wonderful. Who was the Lorenzen? Who was the big fella?
Your words, not mine.
Who was the big fella?
Your words. Jared Lorenzen was a dog.
Lorenzen-esque. Yeah.
Lorenzen-esque.
That's my strategy.
Maybe KJ Jefferson.
Ooh, a little KJ, yeah. Shout out to Gus.
Yeah.
Shout out to Gus.
Dude, I think KJ's going to do well.
They might win the Big 12.
Hey, and watch out for SMU and the ACC. Nobody's talking about
it. Wow, Jake Crane dropping some SMU knowledge on the way out. Great stuff, Jake.
All right, buddy.
We'll be back with more.
At ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Back SEC Media Days coverage live from the Omni in Dallas, Radio Row, for the 2024 edition. We're about halfway done here at SEC Media Days. Eight of the 16 teams in the SEC have presented. Of course, 16 with the inclusion of Texas and Oklahoma this year. Oklahoma, one of the four teams going today, along with Missouri, Georgia, and Tennessee. Some really interesting stuff from very established programs with high expectations going into this year, and three teams that are on Auburn's schedule this year, Bill.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, yesterday, and the only one that was on Auburn's schedule yesterday was Vandy. So, I mean, it wasn't as exciting. It just feels more exciting today. Like we said, four teams that won a lot of ball games last year. And then tomorrow, things get started with Alabama and Kalen DeBoer. Crazy to think Auburn not playing Mississippi State, but they're sending their new coach, Jeff Lebby, then Billy Napier in Florida. And Billy Napier, be really interesting to hear what he has to say with, the seat is definitely warm there, and things will wrap up with Sark, Steve Sarkisian, and Texas. So a big day. I expect there will be huge media contingents there tomorrow for Sark.
I'd love to play
DeBoer.
I'd love to play Venables talking about the Auburn game and his familiarity with Auburn and his respect for Hugh Freeze. We've also got a cool answer from Josh Heupel about emphasizing the portal versus high school recruiting that I thought was kind of interesting, because he stepped into a situation like Auburn where there were only, I think he gives the answer, 60 scholarship players.
I didn't think there were that many. I thought there were fewer than that.
Fewer than that, and sort of, you know, how he's had to rebuild the roster. I see parallels between that and what Hugh Freeze is trying to do. We got a call though, right?
Yeah. First, let's get to the phone, and Yellowhammer has been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So, well, you said that Oklahoma is replacing their entire offensive line. Woo, that's a mountain.
It is. And, I mean, yeah, they've got an inexperienced quarterback and a new offensive line.
So here's my question, though. Do they have dry powder and they reload, or is this a case of, oh, my goodness?
Well, Oklahoma generally has talent. I mean, they have not been out of the top 10 recruiting for as long as I can ever remember. So, I mean, they're going to have some talent, but I do like the fact that their first SEC road game is at Auburn.
Well, and just to be the first game whatever in a series of games that it usually takes to really gel a good offensive line.
Yeah, well, they play Tennessee. They host Tennessee the week before they come to Auburn.
Well, that should help.
I would say that helps Auburn, though. I mean, that'll be a fairly physical ball game. Josh Heupel going to Oklahoma. He's going back to his alma mater, Yellowhammer. He was a quarterback there and a Heisman Trophy finalist.
Yeah, they got Tennessee, then they have us. Then they have
Texas.
Yeah, so it's going to be hard to – that's a three-game stretch, very tough.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking at a situation with four graduating seniors and a freshman who went who transferred to Missouri on last year's offensive line. Now, they've been able to add a couple of transfers, USC's left tackle, Michael Tarkin. They have a guard from North Texas who was sought after in the portal, and they have a couple of younger players, redshirt freshmen and sophomores who are ready to step in. But I think that's a situation where you'd rather play that team early than late when they're trying to gel with a brand new offensive line.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But you say they do have some experience.
They have some in-house options that are competing, and they've gone into the portal to grab a couple of starters too that are experienced in college football. A left tackle who started his career at USC and a guard who started his career in the mid-major level at North Texas.
Well, that's
I mean, it's not barren, but you also don't want to be in it. I don't think you want to be in a situation where you're graduating four starters and you lost a fifth in the portal on a unit like your offensive line. So it's going to take some development. I think that plus a young quarterback if they can start strong, you'd figure that's a team that's going to get better as the season goes on, as those guys gain experience. But they got some tough games early with Tennessee coming to Norman, mm-hmm. and then their first ever SEC road game in Auburn before the end of September.
What do you know about their center?
I don't know which one. I think the center is. I think it's one of the redshirt options. I don't believe he has a career start to his name. I think he's the redshirt freshman. Bates is projecting as the center. I don't know too much about him. But again, that's one of the positions where, I mean, they're just. I think there's going to be a lot of. They're going to be under the gun early when you're talking about replacing that much at that position.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. Dan, let's get to the bottom of the hour break. Then we'll run some audio if that's all right.
Sounds good.
All right, we will be back. Stick with us. Final half hour coming up here on the Tuesday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the ESPN 106.7 coverage of SEC Media Days, the drive live from Radio Row here in Dallas at the Omni. Exciting day as we've had four high quality programs, three of them on Auburn's schedule, and then the Tennessee Volunteers as well, with Josh Heupel addressing the media with their coaches and players. And we're halfway through with an event that's gone really well so far. Fast paced, a lot of interesting stuff from different folks around the conference about the upcoming season.
Yeah, some great stuff. Hey, I wanted to pass along. It's funny because we talked about this a couple of times on the show today. Andy mentioned it. We were talking about it with Brian yesterday. The Major League Draft is done, and Auburn ended up having three signees drafted in the last two rounds. Connor Gatwood, the player that Perfect Game is ranked as the number 41 overall player in the nation, was taken by the Angels in the 19th round. Also in the 19th round, the player that I'd been talking about, Damarian Terrell, from Thompson, Alabama, taken in the 19th round by the Blue Jays. He'd been ranked the number 153 player in the draft. And then finally, catcher Chase Frelick from Peachtree City, Georgia, taken by the Padres in the 20th round. So it's not that Auburn went through the draft unscathed. They did have three players taken in the last two rounds. Now what you'll have to watch for is how they spend, those teams spend their money on their earlier draft picks, the Angels, the Blue Jays, and the Padres. Because players who that are drafted on the final day can be signed for $150,000 plus any money teams save below the slot value where they're picks in the first 10 rounds.
Where do you think this leaves Auburn as far as it's obviously not great news when your signees are drafted. The question then becomes: Can Auburn hold on to some of the pieces of next year's team?
I would think my initial thoughts are that it's pretty darn good for Auburn that they were taken that late, because we'd seen projections of Gatwood and Terrell taken in the top seven or eight rounds, and it'll be interesting to see if the Angels, Blue Jays, and Padres have the kind of money the kind of money left to pay those guys. If they have that much money left from what they spent on the first 10 rounds, to be able to pay those guys like they would have been top 10 round picks. So,
hey, Bill, you know, the other big baseball news today, because we talked about it yesterday, incredibly, is Commissioner Manfred.
Yeah, how about trading draft picks?
No, Bill. How about robot umps in the strike zone? Because you've got Commissioner Manfred talking about using spring training next year to experiment with the automated ball strike system.
It has to get there.
The ABS system, which is in use at AAA ballparks for the second year this year, and Major League Baseball experimenting with modifications. But it sounds like it sounds like they're going to. We could see a human umpire with a challenge system where you could go to the ABS if you disagree with the human umpire's call. You could have a system where it's entirely balls and strikes entirely decided by the automated system instead of the human ump. But it sounds like we are on the verge of pretty significant changes to the balls and strike system in Major League Baseball with regard, whether it's challenges or whether it's a robot ump making all the decisions.
Well, I'm generally a traditionalist when it comes to sports and obviously including baseball, But no, I'm all for there being an electronic strike zone and it just being called. That way the umpires then can call all the plays at the bases. I think it would be the best situation. That way you wouldn't, I mean, you'd cut down on a lot of the arguing. I mean, if the ball beep catches one of the corners or something, the batter doesn't have anything to be arguing or complaining about.
I mean, think the bigger concern is the top and bottom of the strike zone, right?
Because it would have to adjust. Sure, it has to adjust from batter to batter.
It adjusts. I believe what they're doing at AAA is 51%, either 51 or 52% of the batter's height is the top of the strike zone, and the bottom is they start at the ground, and you know, when 27 to 51% of your midsection is the strike. I mean, they're still working things out, but it does seem like we are rapidly approaching something that we've talked about in the past, which is a more automated system of balls and strikes in Major League Baseball.
Dan, I'd be really interested. I mean, when is the AI coming up? Is that tomorrow?
That's Thursday. Tomorrow. Tomorrow is the chief medical officer, and then and Thursday is the AI panel.
Oh, okay. And you have also, I think you've also got playoff, the bowl playoff.
Yes. Tomorrow morning, the college football playoff folks get it started.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm really interested in the AI talk, because I mean, it's not inconceivable that you could be able to really determine exactly where the ball is, as opposed to the best guess that we have to do now. So
I mean, folks,
I'd
will
love
point
to see
out
that
automated systems are used frequently in high level tennis.
Yeah.
To determine the spot. You've got the eye in the sky. You've also got VAR in European soccer, which can automate the decisions and correct officials' mistakes. And so, yeah, it sounds like I think human umps with a challenge system might be the way to go, Bill. I know that maybe it could extend.
Golly, that could make the games back to 3.5 hours.
Well,
I mean, how many challenges would you get? If you got – the thing is, what I don't – I mean
– Well, how many wrong challenges do you get, right? Because I have always hated a system where your challenge is right and you lose it anyway.
Yeah, but I mean – if they want to keep the game – if they want to keep the pace of the game moving, then you just go with the electronic strike zone with the robot umps.
And you know what? And if they feel good enough to have it, you know, overriding for a challenge system, maybe it should just be calling the balls and strikes completely.
Yeah, I mean, you leave everything else to the ump. I mean, the rest. I mean, there's still plenty for umps at three or four bases.
No, so yeah, saw that, and we were talking.
No, I did not see that.
The AI panel,
I'd seen the thing about Major League Baseball looking to follow along with every other sport that allows trading of draft picks.
Mentioned it during, I guess Manfred does an annual, this was earlier today, actually it was not yesterday, Manfred talking with the Baseball Writers Association of America before the All-Star game, and the ABS system was brought up, and he's talking about expanding its use in spring training and maybe bringing it to the majors as early as 2026.
So what'd you think? I mean, what'd you think of the Home Run Derby? I don't think we really got a chance to get into that much. We just sort of talked about Ingrid Andress. But
Get to see too much of it, but it's nice to see Teoscar playing well, because Dodgers have not traditionally done all that well.
I tell you what, he did better every time after Vlad Jr. would come over and talk to him. It seemed like that really helped inspire him. But man, it was fun. I like the new format. I like the way that was done, man, Bobby Witt Jr. came so close on his last at bat before he got to the bonus round, and then on the last swing in the bonus round.
I mean, it was a I think that the competitive adjustments, I think, made for a better home run derby than we've had in recent years. You know, you hate the idea of, oh, well, this guy hit 28, but the guy he was matched up with hit 29 or something, and so the guy who hit 28 home runs is eliminated in the first round. So I think it was probably the right format to just take the top four performers and go from there. And yeah, I think it was all told pretty exciting show.
Yep, and now looking forward to Paul Skeens facing the American League All-Stars. Can he mow them down as easily as he has done everybody in the majors thus far this year?
Really looking forward to seeing what the show looks like tonight with first rookie since Nomo starting the Major League Baseball All-Star game as a pitcher.
Yep. So let's see. I,
You want to run? You want to run Brent Venables?
Yeah, we can do that. I was going to say we can either get the break or we can run that. That's fine.
I asked Venables about the Auburn game. We could maybe run a little bit of that before we take the break.
Sure, let's do that. I think Drew's got it ready.
ESPN 106.7 in Auburn. Coach, Oklahoma's first road game as an SEC team will be in Jordan-Hare Stadium in Auburn at the end of September. First time Oklahoma has ever been to Auburn. The two previous meetings were in bowl games. You're familiar with Auburn from your time both at Oklahoma and Clemson. Out of curiosity, just your understanding of the Auburn program and your relationship with Hugh Freeze as you guys square off at the end of September.
Yeah, well, they're going to be ready. I know that. I'm talking about the fans, the pageantry, pregame, during the game. They've got a wonderful atmosphere, tough, challenging, loud. And Coach Freeze, and he's put together an outstanding staff. I've always watched them. I'm always studying offenses. When I watch a game, I'm watching the offense. Most of the time, I don't watch the defense. I'm just always looking for good plays that I know are coming if we haven't seen it already. And Hugh's always been on the front end of the cutting edge of the next new great thing offensively and putting you in conflict on defense. So I've got tremendous respect for he and his staff and what he's been able to accomplish in his career. We were in Turks and Caicos until I saw him at the SEC meetings. We were in Turks and Caicos with our families a summer or two ago, and we found out that we were down there together. And so we had a quick chat, but great people, good man, and a fantastic coach. And Auburn's going to be a real challenge, on the road.
That was Oklahoma head coach Brent Venables talking about Auburn on the schedule, the trip Oklahoma will make to Auburn at the end of September, and the his experiences competing with Auburn in the past in his college football career.
Good stuff there. It's they're great to have the opportunity to hear from all the coaches and multiple players. We'll be back. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Bill and Don here in the studio. Dan, of course, in Dallas for day two of SEC Media Days.
Hey, this is Kevin Toto, owner of
SPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of the Tuesday edition of The Drive, Dan Peck live in Dallas, SEC Media Days, Radio Row here at the Omni downtown. Eight teams have had their turn at the podium. Eight more will go to tomorrow and Thursday, including Auburn, which wraps things up as one of the two teams in the second phase of Thursday's media opportunity. Brent McMurphy, Bill, somebody I just bumped into. He's also going to try to join the show sometime in the next couple of days from the Action Network. He's been asking a really interesting question to a couple of the coaches, including Kirby Smart, about with Nick Saban out of the league, who does he think could be the coach that's giving folks second chances and taking in coaches who maybe have experienced recent turbulence the way Nick Saban did with guys like Sark and Lane Kiffin.
Huh.
I hadn't thought about that.
I hadn't either.
I wonder if the answer might be Hugh Freeze with DJ Durkin as his new defensive coordinator. You wonder if Hugh Freeze certainly somebody who understands the value of a second chance in college football. I hadn't thought about that until he asked the question to a couple of people, and I do wonder if Hugh Freeze is good an answer as anybody in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to think about that. I really don't know. Nobody just comes to mind. We'll just have to wait and see if somebody else does do that. But you're right.
It could be one of Saban's disciples, right? Could be a former Saban guy like Sark.
Sark was a guy that was given one of those chances.
Yeah, for sure.
As was Lane Kiffin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
All,
I mean, so
a lot of
I mean, so I mean, it could absolutely be one of those guys. But I also could see a situation. I could see a scenario where Hugh Freeze is more understanding. Certainly, if he gains the goodwill and the job security from multiple years of success, maybe he can take a chance on somebody who's a little bit controversial or otherwise, dealing with a damaged image or more after their recent career.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I hadn't heard anybody talking about that. That's a really interesting thought. The one thing that I have seen a good bit of today is that multiple people saying that, hey, regardless of what Florida State and Clemson do, the SEC doesn't care. The SEC is not interested. Those aren't the ACC teams that the SEC could be interested in.
Also a really interesting Brett McMurphy story there at Action Network about the ACC, about the future of Florida State and Clemson. Mm-hmm. You know, he's talked to, and very few people who want to go on the record, but he's talked to university presidents, he's talked to athletic directors in both the SEC and the Big Ten that have expressed multiple reasons that they don't think that Florida State would be a good fit in their conference, even if whether they break away from the ACC or the ACC implodes.
Right. I mean, and Don, it seems like the most likely landing spot for Florida State and Clemson is going to be the Big 12.
Very interesting. I think they might have put the cart before the horse a little bit.
Well, I mean, still, getting in the Big 12 would be better than staying in a lame ACC.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a better choice. You're exactly right, than what they have now. But I think they just assumed, which we know what that means,
right,
is, oh, boy, they're going to take us. They want us. But you never know.
The battle's going to be for North Carolina. The SEC and Big Ten would love North Carolina.
I do wonder if, yeah, Clemson and Florida State, the belief was that because of their recent football success, they would be they'd be a very attractive partner. And maybe this is gamesmanship, because I do wonder if they were truly available, would the SEC stand back and watch the Big Ten take them, or vice versa, or would some comp? Because we heard a lot of the same stuff about Oregon and Washington before they ended up joining the Big Ten, as to whether or not they're an ideal partner. But interesting stuff coming out about the about a couple of teams that may not be long for the ACC.
Great stuff again today, Dan, from Dallas, and looking forward to tomorrow. Should be a really fun day with things getting started with Kalen DeBoer and Alabama, and then wrapping up with Sark and Texas.
Tomorrow's going to be a zoo, Bill. Kalen DeBoer and Alabama early, Texas in the second phase. I'm bracing myself for the media outpouring there's going to be for Texas tomorrow.
Again, a reminder, I will not be in tomorrow. Dan's got it from Dallas. Jason Caldwell should be in. Don will be in. Again, the coverage from Dallas, thanks to the Orthopedic Clinic, Plaza Bar and Lounge, Roots Real Estate, State Farm Insurance Agent Kaylee Bryan Chaddock, Wisdom Law Firm, and University Ace Hardware. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here. Hollywood knows that a five-star